The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People with Aaron Ryan,
Bill Cundiff,
and Bob Martin.
Look at us. We're like a well-oiled machine.
The crew.
Well, we have two pastors with us today. We were going to be talking with Jake McCauley, and he suggested that we speak with Pastor David Whitney regarding the Convention of the States. He said he was more the expert. So for those of you who thought we were going to be speaking with Jake, he's coming in on the 20th. Well, okay, not coming in, but he'll be on the 20th. How's that? And
yeah, Convention of the States getting a lot of play nowadays.
I know. So we've got to find out. We've kind of thought it was a bad thing, but you know, now people are talking. It's interesting. The camps are splitting. Then the second hour, we are going to be speaking with a local pastor here, Guy Asherman. We've had him on before. You'll like him. He's a nice man. And just did a morality rally, actually, 2 weeks ago.
Could they get anybody to come?
Actually, it was really full. They had 300 people there.
Wow.
Yeah, people actually get it and are frustrated that the country's going sideways and talk about it every day, how
nuts things are going.
Well, and just in case you weren't sure, then another Planned Parenthood video comes out. And then
don't get me started on that.
Yeah, then you realize the devil's real.
Yeah, there is a moral problem here.
Yeah, so we'll be chatting about that and I suppose lots of other things in the second hour. So there you go. That's the big rundown. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. So you have lots of information there. We usually post the archive of the show within a half hour, 40 minutes. Kind of depends on how our technology interacts with us. Sometimes faster, sometimes slower. But always Robert Exter does a nice commercial-free archive by the afternoon or early evening. And so if you want to send this to a friend, but you know they won't listen through the commercials, we all have those friends. I would be one of those friends. I won't listen to it if it takes too long. So just wait till the commercials zip out of it and then send it to them. And if you want more information about our guests and all that, it's on there as well. All right. Did I get all the housekeeping? Bob, anything?
I think you did anything? Well. Yeah, I think you did well. Let's move along.
Get like an 8 on that.
Nothing to see here.
Right. Classic. Okay, so Pastor Whitney is on the ball. He's already called us. He's on there waiting. He's been teaching the Christian heritage and history of our country with the Institute for the Constitution for over a decade, where he serves as a senior instructor, and he's also a radio host. Was on Stan Monteith's Radio Liberty. Stan passed away end of last year, I believe. So maybe he has reassigned. He's an honor scholar graduate from Rutgers with a master's in Denver from Denver Seminary. He's been a minister for 32 years, so pretty much anything that has anything to do with being a minister, he's probably seen it. He's been there and done that.
Yeah, got the T-shirt.
we're out flanked on that one. So, Pastor Whitney, what are you doing for radio these days?
Oh, thank you, Aaron and Bob. It's a pleasure to be on with you. Actually, that bio, I guess, is a little bit old because, yes, our good friend Dr. Stan. I was on the show with Dr. Stan for 10 years. Just a great hero, a great patriot, and a great Christian. I really miss Dr. Stan. We would spend at least 3 hours a month together on the radio. So Dr. Stan's a great friend who's now with the Lord. But doing a show with WFYL, just outside the Philadelphia area, actually very similar title to yours, We the People, but the subtitle is The Constitution Matters, and do that on Friday mornings at drive time, 7 a.m. And then a few other shows. This week is a particular busy one. I've got four different radio interviews lined up, and I appreciate people really desiring to know what's going on in our country and really get a grip on what our Constitution says about the matters of the day and what's happening with what our federal government is doing. And as we look at the details of the Constitution, we find that it is not a good picture what the federal government is doing, which I know is the reason motivating most people who are you know, interested in seeing a convention of the states take place, recognize we're in very bad shape as a country. And the Constitution's been twisted and contorted and violated and, well, shredded into the trash can in many aspects of what Washington, D.C. does on a daily basis.
Amen.
Yeah.
No, premature.
And with a constitutional convention, I think one of my biggest fears, if we moved in that direction, would be to find people of moral fiber to represent us at something like that.
Well, if we're not following it now,
yeah, I mean,
how will a constitutional
we've gone
convention
so far the wrong way?
Amen.
So what do you think about
all
that?
All of those are significant problems because we don't have people who share our founders' view of law and government. Just I make this a test that I ask anyone who asks for my vote. I ask them a very simple question that if they've studied the Declaration of Independence, they get the right answer to. If they haven't, they don't know it, they stumble around. But the question is this, what is the purpose of government? Pretty simple question, you'd think. Somebody running for office, that should be one of their first questions they know how to answer. Last guy I asked that, he said, well, you know, nobody has ever asked me that question before. And he had a deer in the headlights look, you know. It's like, if you don't know the purpose of government, why in the world are you running for office? And our founders answered it very simply with what we at the Institute on the Constitution call the American view. Just 3 points, real simple to remember. First, there is a Creator God. And, of course, that Creator God, our founder said, is the God of the Bible. It's not Allah, it's not Buddha, not something else. It's the God of the Bible. There's a Creator God. Secondly, our rights come from Him, Him alone, not from government. And then thirdly, the only purpose, the sole purpose of human civil government is to protect and secure those God-given rights, nothing else.
And so with all three of those kind of in jeopardy today, how do you proceed? Because we've thrown all that out, haven't we?
We have, and that's really why Institute on the Constitution exists, to train people in the founder's view of law and government, which is actually a biblical view, which is, as a pastor, my great passion, that people understand what God, the creator of the universe, structured for human civil government, and he did. And there's many people who lie and say, oh, the Bible doesn't say anything about government. Oh, no, it has a great deal to say about human civil government, what is just and unjust and so on. But to train people in that thinking, we've got a huge revolution that's taken place in our land where most people think more like Karl Marx about law and government than they do like Thomas Jefferson or James Madison or any of the founders. So I agree with your concern that if we were to hold a convention today, even if we took a rough sample of just the average person in the population and put them as a delegate to that convention, they would not hold our founders' view of law and government, and they would therefore not protect the God-given rights that we have already have been secured by our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. So we're not in a good state in which we could choose candidates for even a good convention were we able to do that.
Well, yeah, considering Bernie Sanders can fill a stadium, as a declared socialist, who would have ever thought that somebody running under a socialist label could run for president and draw a crowd?
This is part of the madness that's going on in this country.
I keep thinking people figure it out, but I guess they have and they like it.
I think most people don't realize what Margaret Thatcher said, socialism works until you run out of other people's money.
That's a classic quote. And I really don't think they realize that. I think they think it's just more free phones, free health care, everybody, you know, this whole idea of the living wage. I guess on Labor Day we should bring that up because that's always a big drumbeat. Everyone should be making $15 or $20 an hour, even if they're at McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah, every job you take should be enough to support you and your family and send your kids to college. It's just insane. I don't know where that comes from.
Well, actually, more from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who promised a second Bill of Rights, which he guaranteed all those. He said, Bill of Rights was, you know, okay, but it really is inadequate. We need a second Bill of Rights in which he guaranteed health care for everybody, a remunerative job, good housing, and even a vacation. Imagine that. The president promised a vacation as one of your rights. Wow. Well, we're far down the rabbit hole. And I understand the passion of those who want to call for what I would prefer the constitutional term would be an Article 5 convention. The founder said there's two ways that the Constitution can be amended. One is that proposed amendments are put forward by both houses of Congress and then sent to the states. Three-quarters of the states need to ratify them. That's been done 27 times. Our 27 amendments to the Constitution have all been by that congressional route. The other route is that the states themselves, upon application, and I'm reading the exact words here of Article 5, upon application to the Congress, so the states are coming to the Congress, they're appealing to the Congress for this Article 5 convention. So when they make application of the state legislatures to the Congress, then Congress shall call, that's the wording, Congress shall call this convention. So what you look at the details there, Congress is in control of determining, okay, these applications have come in, and now these applications reach the required level, and they're approved, and Congress is the one that actually issues the call. And the other thing that it details that Congress does is once amendments are proposed, Congress determines the ratification process for those amendments. It could be the legislatures of the state actually ratify the proposed amendments, or it could be special conventions are held in each state to ratify the proposed amendments. So the details we have in Article 5 is the Congress is in basically control of all the details that are mentioned there with one exception, and that is the states make application to Congress. And that means the states, in my opinion, in my view here, have very little power over what actually takes place in that convention. They get the ball rolling, but beyond that, the whole process is really under the control of Congress. And so there's a whole lot of questions that our Constitution does not answer about that convention. For example, the issues of who shall call the delegates. Well, it doesn't really determine who picks the delegates and by what criteria are those delegates to be chosen and who instructs those delegates. We're being assured by the folks who are calling for this convention of the states, well, the states are going to be in control of this convention because they get to choose the delegates and they get to commission the delegates and they tell the delegates what they can do and what they cannot do. Well, that is not specified in Article 5. And so where's the meeting to be held? When is it to be held? How long will it last? None of those are answered by Article 5. But I would argue there is an answer for who's in charge of all those things, and that's Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution. It begins, Article 1, Section 8, Congress shall have power, and then it goes through a list of 17 items there, making all laws necessary and proper. And the very last phrase, make all laws which are necessary and proper for the carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. I think the plain language means that if there's something that we've specified in this Constitution, but we have not worked out the details of it, we haven't laid it out in ink, that goes to Congress. And Congress has power to make those decisions on those issues where we have not laid out the details. And I've heard plenty of promises from those in the Convention of the States side that say, oh, no, that won't happen. We could be sure that won't happen.
Sure. We should roll the dice with it because that always works out well. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come back and chat more with Pastor Whitney on the Convention of the States. You can join us online if you're on here Sunday between 12 and 2 on KCNR. We are live and there's a chat room up and ready for you. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, it's there. Mondays we're in Philadelphia, airing from 1 to 3, and that's an archived program. So either way, hope you join us. Be right back in 2 minutes.
Constitution. institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
Got a little Bernie Sanders rally promo in there. Get your Chairman Mao poster ready. Bernie's coming to town. You're listening.
You can't get Chairman Mao clothes anymore. Hillary owns them all.
Nice. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Pastor David Whitney. We're talking about the Convention of the States. Okay, so we were having a lively little chat in the chat room about the states choosing the delegates. And for those of us who are currently living in California, that's a super, super, super scary prospect. How would that work? Pastor Whitney, are you in there?
Well, the process, again, is not specified in the Constitution as to how that would work. The default mode, and by the way, Congress has done a little research. Congressional Research Service has come up with some statements about what they expect would happen. Again, we have never done a constitutional convention of this, Article 5 convention of this nature, so it's hard to know exactly how it would come about and what would take place, but the Congressional Research Service has basically said that, you know, unanswered things are probably in the hands of the Congress. Let me quote what they say on this is page 25 of the Congressional Research Service. No matter how many and how sincere are the assurances from the backers of the new convention that their sole concern is reapportionment, no one can safely assume that the delegates to such a convention, once safely seated and in action, would wish to go home without trying their hand at improving many parts of this delicately balanced document. So even the Congressional Research Service says, look out. If this convention actually happens, they might do a lot more monkeying around with the Constitution than what you send them supposedly to accomplish. So while we don't know the exact how it would work out in terms of the delegates being chosen, let's look at what happened with our own Constitutional Convention in 1787. The states thought they were in control of what was going to happen in Philadelphia. In fact, they were very specific in their instructions to the delegates they sent. Virginia's instructions were for the purpose of revising the federal constitution. We remember the federal constitution at this point before our current constitution was the Articles of Confederation. All the states, only 12 states sent delegates, all the states had similar language that basically said, the purpose, delegate, we are sending you to Philadelphia is to revise the Articles of Confederation. Some were even more specific and said, you can't do this. Massachusetts is one that said, you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't do the other thing in revising the Articles of Confederation. You can only do what we tell you to do. Well, what happened? They arrived, and the very first thing they voted on was to make all the proceedings secret. So if the states thought they were going to be in control of what was happening there in Philadelphia, their communication was immediately cut off, and nobody could know what was happening inside those closed doors in Philadelphia. There was no reporters present. There was nobody allowed to take the information and let the states know what was taking place.
And is there anything to say that that wouldn't happen or wouldn't go that way again?
Exactly. That's my argument, is likely once they meet, they're not in control, or the states are not in control of what their delegates actually do, and the delegates at the convention there in Philadelphia did something entirely different than what their state delegated them to do. But we're told by the Convention of the States, don't worry about that, that can't happen today. And my argument is, no, you really don't understand what a convention is. National conventions, when they gather, because they are commissioned by the people, our commission to do is, as our Declaration of Independence clearly states, if they find that the government is inadequate to meet the needs, a government is inadequate to secure the God-given rights of the people, they have the right to alter or to abolish that government and propose a new government. And that's happened twice in our history. It happened in 1776. They were a convention when they met in Philadelphia in 1776, and they said, we're no longer part of Great Britain. We are separating from Great Britain. We are declaring independence. That government is no longer our government. What happened as a result of the convention in 1776 was a brand new government emerged from those halls in Philadelphia. Same thing in 1787. They went down, told, revise the existing government, the Articles of Confederation. They went down and they completely altered it, proposed a brand new government, and the constitution that came out at the 1787 was a new government from the previous government under the Articles of Confederation. And you look at English history. All such conventions, the Long Parliament that met in 1640, the Convention of Parliament in 1660, and the Convention of Parliament in 1688, when these conventions met, every single time they produced a brand new government came out of those conventions. And so the assurance we have from history is the likelihood of the five instances in history I just cited is that if we had another one of those conventions, it would wind up producing a brand new government. The states cannot control what their delegates do once they meet there.
Now, you say every time it produced a brand new government. In what respect was it brand new? Was it a completely different representation? I mean, what were the changes that were made?
Well, in 1776, we know the Continental Congress abolished the government of the colonies under King George III. That entire relationship and that entire system of government was done away with, no longer a monarchy. It was a constitutional republic under the Articles of Confederation. Go back in English history. Let me just pick the one of 1688. Before 1688, the king was kind of tyrannical, and the kings believed in the divine right of kings. Whatever came out of the king's mouth, that was law. But in 1688, Parliament said, here's an Englishman's Bill of Rights, and they made a contract with King William. King William, if you will sign this Englishman's Bill of Rights, then you can become king of our country. If you will not sign it, you will not be king of our country. So they instituted a constitutional monarchy where the king was bound to obey the Englishman's Bill of Rights. The king was limited. He was not divine right of kings, which is what the government before that had been. So in these instances, we have a brand new government, although there is connections, obviously, with the previous government, just as our Philadelphia Convention of 1787. It produced a brand new government, different in many respects from the Articles of Confederation, even though it retained some elements of that. Obviously, there's a legislative branch. That was the only thing, really, the Articles of Confederation had. It did not have a president, no executive branch, no federal judicial branch under the Articles of Confederation. So they added two new branches of government, and they took what was one house, the legislative branch only had one house in the Articles, and they made a bicameral two-house legislature, both House and Senate. You know, there is some connection, but boy, it's a very different thing that they came up with in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's a big change.
It's a huge change. So, okay, going forward, how do you, you know, when people are all touting, well, this is the only way we can, you know, save the Constitution is we have to have this convention. What is something that's worked for you to walk people back, or is it just kind of an ideological thing? And
no, there is power that we have. Let me talk about two things that we need to understand that are part of our English common law history as well as American common law history. The first is nullification. That is, the legislature passes a bill, and so they're spilling some ink on a piece of paper, and they say, this is law. The executive branch, we say, signs it into law. And then the judicial branch comes along and says, oh, yeah, that's legal, that's constitutional, that's law. Three branches of government have called it law, but it is not law. It can be nullified by lower levels of government, nullified at the state level, nullified at the county level, or even down at the very, very local level. You as an individual citizen have a power that the courts will never tell you about. And that is when you sit on a jury. Our founders defined a jury as a body of citizens that do two things. They judge the law and they judge the facts. Before they judge the facts, they have to judge whether the law is legitimate law or not. That is, does it comport with the Constitution? And does it comport with the laws of nature and nature's God? If it's a law that says two men can marry, sorry, that doesn't comport with the laws of nature and nature's God. Therefore, it is not law, and a jury can nullify it and say, sorry, in this case, this person is not guilty or innocent. This case is thrown out because the law is being judged, and we judge that the law is wrong. The law is not law at all. So nullification can happen on that local level of a jury. Nullification should happen for every elected official. They examine what the Constitution says. They have a constitutional view of government. And when a law, quote-unquote, is handed down, they respond in a way as to whether they really understand it to be law or not to be law. For example, what's happening in Kentucky is a good illustration of this.
Yeah.
My friend Michael Peruca, a co-founder of Institute on the Constitution, was just out there yesterday, spoke at the rally, and he made this clear statement. Judges and courts do not make law. They're not the legislative branch. They do not make law. So whatever it is that they spilled on ink there at the Supreme Court, saying two men can marry, whatever it is, it's not law. Therefore, you cannot put this clerk in prison for violating a law that's not a law. She did not violate any law whatsoever. And so his exhortation to the local officials there, the sheriff, and the mayor of that town, as well as the elected, I understand they elect their prison, the head of their prison system, the head of the correction, is elected official. These elected officials, they swear an oath to the Constitution, and they've been told to put this girl in prison and keep her in prison because somehow she's violated the law. Well, if they do their duty, their oath is not to obey a tyrant wearing a black robe. No, their duty is to obey the law, and that tyrant wearing the black robe is not the law. So that tyrant says, put her in prison, and they could nullify that, say, or interpose. That's the second thing. Interpose, saying, we know it's not law. That's nullification. Interposition then says, we're not going to allow you to abuse the power you have and abuse the God-given rights of the citizens in our jurisdiction by applying something that is not law in our county or in our jail. Kim Davis should be set free by the sheriff, the jailer, and the mayor of that town because what has been commanded of them is not law, but they don't know their duty to interpose when unlaw is attempted to be forced upon the citizens of their county, including Kim Davis here.
But see, that's where we've gone down this road so far. How do we come back from that? Because right now judges are making law and our government is enforcing it. So how do we step back from that?
And that's where what we're doing at Institute on the Constitution is designed to educate citizens on an American view, what we call the American view of law and government. What is our founders designed our constitutional republic to be? What is the meaning of the text of the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and subsequent amendments? So we offer courses that are actually conducted all over the country. I know that there's some south of you guys there in Reading, down in the Sutter Buttes area that are being conducted right now. We offer courses because we know that Americans have been lied to successfully by their schools, both, grade school all the way up through college and graduate school. They've been lied to by the media incessantly about these things. And the lies have to be countered with the truth. And the truth is very simple when you look at what our founders designed. We have far strayed from that. And until we gain a ground with enough Americans to restore that, there's no silver bullet. The Convention of the States is not a silver bullet, and it wouldn't only work if we had a majority of Americans who held our founders' view of law and government.
Okay. So, but at this point, we still have to get past the judges, because you can stand up and bang on that, but you're still going to stand before a judge who's going to rule against you.
Let's talk about how that really works, David. We've got to take a really quick break here, but if we all lived in Kentucky, let's pretend, if we all lived in Kentucky, who would actually do what, and how would that work? Because sometimes it's hard to apply a theory that you've never seen actually carried out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know what that sort of looks like. Anyway, we'll be right back. We're chatting with Pastor David Whitney here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Look down upon me, Jesus. You gotta help me make a stand. You just got to see me through another day. My body's aching and my time is at hand. I won't make it any other way.
Welcome back.
Oh, I've seen fire.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Pastor David Whitney, chatting about the Convention of the States. Okay, so in the case of Kim Davis, Pastor Whitney, how would that actually work? Like, who are the players and what do they do?
Players are the ones that, at the most significant level, of course, are the county players, which would include the sheriff, who is duly elected by the people. He swears an oath to the U.S. Constitution. He swears an oath to the state constitution. And if they have a county document, like a charter or whatever, he swears an oath to that as well. He is swearing an oath not to obey what some judge says, but to obey what the Constitution says. So in that case, what he should do with the command that he imprisoned, Davis, is that he would not do that, and he would protect her from any federal, federal goons. Our founders never, ever, ever designed for the federal government to have any police powers whatsoever. The chief law enforcement officer at the level of the county is the sheriff, and he is the highest law enforcement officer in the county, period. That is, the FBI has no greater authority than the sheriff, nor any other federal agency, EPA, any federal agency that comes into, including the IRS, is beneath the sheriff. They can only do action in the county if the sheriff gives them permission to do so. So the sheriff should be the one who protects Kim Davis in that county from an attack that comes from the federal judiciary that may be backed up by some federal goons that come into their district. An illustration where this failed in the sense of the sheriff doing his duty was out at Bundy Ranch. You probably remember the details of that. Had the county sheriff done his duty, he would have prevented the BTFE and all the other goons that arrived there in Clark County. He would have prevented them from doing anything in Clark County. He would have driven them out. But instead, the sheriff was in full cooperation with the feds to attack the Bundys.
But see, that's the issue now with pretty much every state out there, is they have relinquished their state power and allowed the federal government to come in because the federal government carries such a big stick as far as, you know, all this money they give the states for just about every department. They don't want to risk, you know, making Big Brother mad, so they let them come in and do that. And I think that's kind of where it's all kind of starting to fall apart, isn't it?
In other words, the states and the counties have been bribed by the federal government to surrender their constitutionally sworn duties to protect their citizens from the federal tyrant of Washington, D.C.
Yep, that's exactly right. They can no longer afford not to take the money to support all the programs, much of which are federally mandated, and so if they don't have the money, then more problems.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think it has to start at the local level. And by the way, there are sheriffs gathering who are constitutional sheriffs. Perhaps you've heard of CSPOA, Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. Sheriff Richard Mack leading that organization of training sheriffs in their constitutional duties. They are a growing number, more than 1,000 now, and that's about 3,000 jurisdictions across the country. 1,000 have signed on and said, yes, I want to be a constitutional sheriff. And they do face a challenge because, indeed, they are being bribed with money from Washington, D.C., but if they can be persuaded by their citizens, don't accept that money. Refuse those grants. Don't take the tanks that the federal government wants to give you, and don't take the machine guns the federal government wants to give you. We'd rather have you have less equipment but protect our God-given rights. But the citizens have to stand behind such an elected sheriff and not only vote him in, but be willing to support him as his posse should push ever come to shove with the federal tyrants.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And you know, you could go a step further. Because a lot of these sheriffs are totally controlled by the county board of supervisors. You know, they're going to control their budget. So, you know, we have to kind of put our foot down at that level as well in order to keep a good sheriff. Otherwise, he's gone.
we had an excellent constitutional sheriff just in our neighboring state here in Delaware, in Sussex County. Sheriff Jeff Christopher stood on the right principles, but he was not reelected. He lost in the primary because the people of his county were not aware enough, they were not constitutionally trained enough, that they would recognize, we want a constitutional sheriff, even though it may cost us. We want that more than we want whatever is offered up as the standard sheriff who does whatever the federal government does. So it really begins with the education of the people, that enough of the populace is educated that they can not only secure a constitutional sheriff, but keep him in office to protect their God-given rights from the tyrannical federal government.
Well, has anybody talked to the sheriff? I'm assuming they have, and I just haven't followed it close enough, in Kim Davis's county?
Yes, actually, my friend Michael Peruca spoke, not, I don't think directly, but spoke in terms of the audience, and the sheriff, as well as the mayor, as well as the jailer, were all there present. In fact, they were some of the speakers who I think were part of that event yesterday. And so he clearly declared to them, they need to set Kim Davis free because she is illegally put into prison. There is no law. She didn't break any law. There is no law. Judges don't make law. The Supreme Court didn't make a law. She's been put in prison for not violating anything. She did not violate any law whatsoever. She didn't do what a black-robed lawyer told her to do, but that black-robed lawyer doesn't have any jurisdiction or power to tell her what to do in her job. So he was exhorting the sheriff there to go there, get your keys, unlock it, let her out in violation and direct defiance of the federal tyrants. Show the federal tyrants, we the people of the United States will not submit to your tyranny any more than our founders submitted to the tyranny of King George III.
Yeah, because I think where it gets all wrapped around the axle is it comes down from court, and then you always hear, it's the law of the land, you know, that seems to be the big battle cry.
Yeah, they ruled on it. The judges
yep,
all ruled on it, so now
land.
It's the law
so
of the land.
Everybody has to, you know, it can't be changed. It must be right, and everybody just better go along.
Well, you know, that's easy to answer because you just open the Constitution and read the very first sentence. First sentence, that is, after the preamble, that first sentence is, all legislative power herein granted shall be vested in a Congress. All legislative power, that is, the only branch of government that makes law is the legislative branch. Judges do not make law. The only thing they do is an opinion. By the way, every court, when they put out whatever their opinion is, it says right at the top of the page there, opinion, opinion of the Supreme Court. It's not law, it's an opinion, and it's not binding on anyone except the parties that have come into the courtroom. For example, Roe v. Wade is not the law of the land. It is a court opinion that binds only two people, Roe and Wade, nobody else. But again, we've been lied to so successfully in America that most Americans believe Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. No, it's not. In fact, it can be challenged by any state that chooses to challenge it, any county that chooses to challenge it. We're trying to drive Planned Parenthood out of our county, and I hope by God's grace we will succeed in doing so, at least in our county. We'll be a murder-free zone for babies in this wicked state of Maryland. But, I mean, any county could do that, as well as any state could end abortion within their boundaries. They have the jurisdiction to do that. Roe v. Wade only binds Roe and Wade. It does not bind anyone else.
Wow. Seems amazing that that's gone on for, I don't know when that actually happened, but all these years, what, 50 years or something?
And 60 million dead babies.
Yeah, no mm-hmm. kidding. Well, on that cheerful note, hang on just a it's like, well, awkward silence. I guess we'll take a break. We just have one more before the top of the hour. We'll be back with Pastor David Whitney. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
New Year's Eve was the final barrier. Dominant submission.
Radio's appear.
Took you up and we put you in the backseat.
Dominant
submission.
Radios appear.
From year to year, we looked up for the venture.
Dominant
submission.
Radios appear.
Dominant submission.
Dominant
submission.
Dominant
submission.
Just
Okay, because the Constitutional Convention, we are going to get fooled again, huh? Pastor Whitney?
That's the sad reality. If there is a convention, it's likely that we're going to lose more rights than we already have secured by the Constitution. What needs to happen, really, is an education of Americans so that the citizens at the grassroots level, they know what the Constitution says, and they resist and only elect people, first of all, who are constitutionalists, truly to the tune of our founders, not what the modern judges say the Constitution means, but what our founders said. And that really begins with educating ourselves, which is why I invite folks to go to our website, theamericanview.com, theamericanview.com, and there's plenty of course materials available there, and we offer things online. I'm going to be teaching on the Constitutional Convention question this Friday. Of course, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon your time, but anyway, if people want to view that live, and again, we have many materials available that can help people learn what our founders said. And again, the course is designed to be done by any citizen anywhere without any expertise, history, background. You can put the course on in your community, even if it's just in your own living room. But if you begin to train people in your jurisdiction, then those people can influence who gets elected. And if you can elect constitutional people, the sheriff being the most important, but all the people at the local level, you can begin to push back tyranny that comes down from the federal, as well as in your case, obviously Sacramento is a tyrant of gargantuan proportions.
Well, you've heard about them, have you?
Tyranny. Yes, I was actually out there in April down in the Sutter Buttes area and talked to many, many residents who were very, very upset with the water issues, and on it goes with the tyranny that comes in from Sacramento.
Yeah, they're a whole different special kind of tyranny. it just never ends. You know, we've got water boards and just
air boards.
And we've got more air boards. I mean, people think the EPA is bad. You know, California has a whole other team that plays background. I guess it's more like a band. They we have
bad music, though.
Yeah, we have a lot of background singers for the EPA here. Frustrating, actually. I joke about it, but that's just because pulling out our hair is kind of pointless. But
and talking with the folks there who want to form the state of Jefferson, I applauded them that, you know, if you can accomplish that, I guess the problem is Sacramento is going to stand in your way. You might call out the Pharaoh like Moses, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh stands there and says, "No way, not until hell freezes over will I let you people go," because that's what tyrants do. But there may be other ways, in addition to pushing to develop the state of Jefferson, that you can, on a local county level, push back tyranny, whether it's a state or federal tyranny.
Well, you keep thinking that eventually people are going to figure this out. We have a guy on next week. We're going to be talking about some of these land and mineral and water grabs being done by the tribes, by the Indian tribes. They're being used as pawns. There was a big decision that came down yesterday in Montana. Just devastating. So if people who live in the city, they want their property rights. You know, they don't want somebody coming in and saying, "Oh, well, you know, I think we'll take your house because we think it's we're going to give this time immemorial right to some Native American." I think people haven't fully grasped where this is going.
And it's time to wake up because it's a very late hour, and the tyrant thinks he's got it all sewn up. But the thing that's encouraging to me, I've been, you know, for 15 years teaching with Institute on the Constitution, the thing that's encouraging to me is more and more Americans are recognizing something is desperately wrong, which is probably why Donald Trump is doing so well. People are desperate for any answer to the disaster that they see around them. And the answer is really simple. It goes back to the Constitution, back to our founders' view of law and government, back to the principles of the Declaration of Independence. If we can train enough people in these principles, the tyrants are a minority. We can overwhelm them. The majority of Americans don't want this, and they're sick and tired of it. And now they're beginning to be awoken by the very egregious things that the federal tyrant as well as the state tyrants are doing at this point.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that's why Donald Trump is getting the reviews he's getting, is he's saying all the things that people want to hear, and he's promoting the opposite of what our government is promoting, and people are so fed up with the direction our country's going, they're gonna take anything that goes against, you know, against the direction we're going right now, right, wrong, or indifferent, unfortunately, and that's really not a good thing either.
Right, which is why we need to get back to the plan of our founders. I mean, Donald Trump has some good things, but I haven't heard a whole lot of talk other than the 14th Amendment, which I appreciated. The anchor babies is absolutely a violation of what the 14th Amendment says, and that's a whole other talk.
You have a good article about that, though. We linked it.
Yes, that's on our website. Thank you, because people need to realize that our founders, or those who crafted the 14th Amendment, never intended anchor babies at all, period. But if we get back to our founders' plan, we can restore liberty. And I think that's the message we need to get out to people who are desperate and feel it's hopeless. The best hope we have is to recover our founders' view of law and government, and it can be done. We've provided the tools, and again, that's why I would encourage people to get to our website, theamericanview.com. We have the tools that can help you not only train yourself, train your family, train all your friends and neighbors, get into your church and train everybody at your church. We can do this, but it's going to take the grassroots, because we've got the media stacked against us, the entire educational establishment stacked against us, state governments, federal government, all these people are stacked against us. The people on the grassroots, though, can still take America back. Our Constitution is still the law of the land, in spite of the violations that daily take place in Washington, D.C. and in our state capitals. The law of the land is not being enforced because we, the people, have stepped aside and stopped enforcing it. That's where the problem lies.
Exactly. Pastor David Whitney, that was the fastest hour ever.
Oh,
thanks
boy.
A million.
Thank
zillion.
You so much for being on.
Pleasure. It's a pleasure to be
We'd
with you guys.
Love to have you
Thank
again.
You so much.
Well, happy Sunday
to
you. Thanks for popping in.
All right. God bless.
Bye. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Just as a throwback to the last hour, Bob brought up an interesting point. He said if it's like most conventions, everybody would get drunk and fight anyway. So
it would not end well.
It would not end well. So I guess if you're still up in the air about convention of the states, that's another point to ponder.
Well, especially if the hookers show up late, you know, they're all going to be unhappy.
Nice. Yeah. Nice lead-in for Pastor Asherman. That's lovely, Bill.
Well, I'm sorry. I have no faith in anybody they would send to represent us in today's world. They'd be the most immoral bunch of people I think we could ever assemble.
Oh, there you go.
I'm sorry.
Oh, is that where you were going? Okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Yikes.
I'm just, I'm very disillusioned with.
It just kind of struck me.
Our representation.
Blue. Well, and the people who
we might have more morality with the hookers than with the Washingtonians.
We're going to double down. I told you to put the headphones on. I didn't tell you they were going to burn your ears. Oh my gosh. Well, just in case you weren't having any fun. Pastor Guy Asherman is here from Reading Christian Fellowship. Actually, he's here from someplace else, I'm sure, like your house or something. But
no, actually, I just came
you did,
from
just,
our services.
You
yes.
just
yeah.
raced over?
Yes.
Well, at least we're not 8 to 10. See, when we were 8 to 10 in the morning,
Couldn't
that was
it.
A deal breaker. So mm-hmm. we're happy to have afternoons. Okay, so how'd you get into this pastor business anyway? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
Well, since I've known you for a while and I've never asked that question.
Sure. I was not raised in a Christian home. I was not a church goer.
Yeah. Oh, that's surprising.
Yeah. At the age of 22, living like all 22-year-olds did and still do, there was, I'm not sure how to explain it other than the Lord began to speak to me. It was Easter season in 1977. I was two.
And I was a sophomore in high school.
And so The Message of Easter, and a film that was released that year was called Jesus of Nazareth.
Oh, yeah.
And that film had a great impact on my heart. And I'm not sure why. It was highly unusual for me to even consider, watch it.
What did you think you were going to do when you grow up?
I was going to be a ranch manager. In fact, I was in college to become a ranch manager. And I grew up in ranch country and worked on ranches. And so I have a degree in agriculture.
Well, who knew?
Yeah, and after I got my degree in agriculture, I went out and planted a church. So, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting
Well, you know, the Bible says a lot about agriculture, you know.
It sure does.
You will reap what you sow those sorts of things.
And the mustard seed and, you know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and we had some sheep for a while, and I'll tell you what, after you deal with real sheep, the Bible's kind of offensive. You know, it's like, what the heck? I don't want to be the sheep.
They're not real smart.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's how leaderless we are, and we follow whoever's out in front. And so we are sheep, and that's why we need strong leadership. That's why we need the Word. That's why we need churches to take a stand. And
I'm just
that's
shocked.
That's kind of that's sort of the biggie here is the churches are not necessarily taking a stand.
Well, I you know, they've taken.
You're not
going to
talk about hookers again, are you? Because otherwise we're going to take
about
your
hookers. Okay. But I just, you know, they've taken pretty much everything religion out of schools, out of government, and it's just snowballing so fast right now, and you look at where our country's going, I'm not sure we can stop it at this point because nobody is stepping forward to lead us out of this in the direction we really need to go.
If you just landed here, you know, not as a baby but as a grown-up, you know, if you just popped in out of nowhere, you would think that everyone in this country was a gay atheist. I mean,
they get all the attention.
It looks like this is just the most prevalent thing. And, you know, I think that's odd.
Well, people are afraid of being shouted down. They're afraid of being labeled. And, of course, that's exactly what's happening to anybody who disagrees with their agenda, that suddenly you're a bigot. You're a worthless human being.
Yep, you're a hater.
And so we cower. And we don't hate people. We love people. Whatever choices they make in life does not change our love for them. But we are also here to expound what God says about all of the choices that we make in life, whether it's heterosexual issues or homosexual issues. The Lord speaks to both of those.
I was going to say, there's restriction on all of it. You know, it isn't like somebody's getting a pass.
There's a whole lot more said about heterosexual sin than there is homosexual sin in the Scriptures. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the thought that occurred to me as you had mentioned, Bill, that how are we going to turn this thing around? The thought that occurred to me is this, that humanism has been taught in the public schools for decades and decades, okay? The Scopes trial was in 1925, with that trial then and the conclusion of it, they allowed evolution to be taught alongside of creation. And since that time, of course, evolution has pushed creation out, and we can only... if there was no God, why would we have any faith in this country at all? Because I went through 18 years of secular education, and I still believe.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people alive in this country today went through secular education, the public school system, and yet 90% of us still believe there's a God. So there's something at work here that's more powerful than what we see with the eye, because it's very easy for us to become discouraged. That, you know what, we've got the universities are working against us, the schools are working against us, and I just want to be able to say that there is hope. It could turn around, and it'll be because the Lord desires it to be turned around. And what we need to do is we need to encourage people who do have convictions to not give up. Don't draw back. Don't crawl into a corner and hide. This is the time, especially right now, that we're supposed to take a stand and be vocal about what it is we believe.
And there are a lot of people who agree. Okay,
yes.
So let's talk about a real example, because we've got folks in the chat room bringing this up.
Mm-hmm.
You had a morality rally.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard to say all very fast. You have to sort of separate that out. A morality rally at your church, and it was on a Wednesday night at 5:30, so it was outside of your regular service time.
Yes.
And it was pretty short notice. notice.
Very short notice.
Like a couple of weeks? Or
oh, not even that. A couple of days.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
Because Congressman LaMalfa, it was only on Saturday of the prior to the Wednesday that we had agreed, okay, let's do it on Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
And so only from Saturday on, and I did it through announcements, I did it through emails,
sure.
And we did it through Facebook. So with 4 days' notice, we turned out a pretty good group of folks.
Yeah.
I think it's just a topic that I think there's more people out there that want to hear it mm-hmm. than not.
Yes.
And you're right. It's going to take somebody with leadership skills to bring those people out. Mm-hmm. And
well, people are going to have to realize, you know, it's interesting. You don't necessarily have to have one person who's super dynamic, but if I'm working on a project that hasn't quite gotten started, and I'm finding there are a lot of people who are thinking the same way, and so I met with a lady for lunch, and then she said, well, hey, how about so-and-so? And then we all sat there and said, well, how about so-and-so and so-and-so? And, you know, we came up with all these different people. It's like, hey, they all think like we do. We don't know really where we want to go. We don't know what we want to call it. You know, there's not a specific track for it, but we all know that we need to fill this niche.
Yes.
And I think that this is the same way. So we are a town, for the folks that will listen to this on the East Coast, we are a city with 90,000 people. So the people in Philadelphia are like, what? Their churches have more than 90,000 people. So we're in a relatively small area in the rural northern part of California. Your church is I would think your church is one of the bigger ones in our area.
Probably.
And you're called, I know it's Redding Christian Fellowship, but what does that mean?
Well, the word fellowship, of course, emphasizes the need for people who of belief to be in relationship with one another.
Right.
We are a church. And, of course, the word church simply means assembly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the word means. So we can call it assembly, we can call it church, we can call it fellowship. The main thing is that we're a body of believers who covenant together to faithfully serve the Lord and to reach the lost in any way we can.
And are you a school, too?
No, we're not. There is a Redding Christian school in town, but it is not affiliated with Redding Christian Fellowship.
Okay. Yeah. So this is... open, obviously, to anybody who wants to come. People follow your church, I know, just, you know, because you have events and you have speakers, and you guys do a lot with the Rescue Mission.
Mm-hmm.
The Rescue Mission has their graduation there every year for their program. So when you told people you were doing a morality rally, did people say, oh, great? Or was it, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Were they worried?
I don't think anybody was too worried, you know. Sometimes I might make the other leadership in the church a little bit nervous. You know, what's Guy doing now? And under normal circumstances, of course, that would have gone through all of the channels. It would have been done well, but I had no time.
Sure.
And so Congressman LaMalfa says, I'm going to be there. And I said, good. So I made the date, and then I asked for forgiveness instead of permission. And,
I like doing it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Big fan.
but our leadership was very much in support of what we ended up doing there. So...
And then you invited all sorts of other churches.
Yes.
I don't know how many, but...
Probably 35 or 40 other churches.
Okay.
And how many showed up?
One.
One pastor.
One pastor.
Yeah, not necessarily people. For people out there that are going, hey, I was there.
And considering the subject matter, why didn't they show up?
Well, number one, it was short notice.
Absolutely.
Number two, a lot of churches have events on Wednesday night. Some of them have Awana. Some of them have their own Bible studies and prayer meetings and stuff. So we started at 5:30 with the hopes that they could still get in some of the time. I was actually hoping that they would have brought their Wednesday group with them.
You know, yeah, sure.
Right.
We could have put 1,000 people in there that night.
Yeah, and that would have made sense. That would have been.
Yeah.
That would have fallen right in.
And so I emphasized that with the folks that I contacted on Saturday, so they would have had time to have announced it on Sunday and says, hey, on Wednesday we're going to go over to RCF. Part of the problem, too, is that I don't want people to think that this is the ministry of Redding Christian Fellowship. This is community.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
No,
this is an issue that goes beyond the walls of any of our churches, and I don't want people to feel like, we're empire building,
yeah,
or that we're making it about us. We're not. I mean, if it's going on, I don't have to be a part of it. It's just that nobody else is doing it.
Sure. Right. Well, then you guys have a big place. You can fit, how many, 1,000 people in there,
not,
you think?
About 800, max.
So what do you think? There were like 300 there, maybe?
Probably. Yeah.
I'm kind of a rotten estimator, but
we've also
you had a lot of people.
We had about 300, maybe 250 to 3, and we also have had more than 300 people who have watched our video of that event after we had the event.
Oh, that's
now, you said it was short notice. How short notice was it?
I learned on Saturday, and we had it the following Wednesday. So there wasn't a lot of time to promote it. So
yeah.
And you had Shelley Gibbs there from CareNet, which, as I learned right before the program, is a national organization.
Yes.
And I didn't put any of their stuff on here. Do you know right off the top of your head? I know that they work with people who, women and families who are pregnant.
Right. And, you know, they do a great job. Shelley does a great job. There are CareNet agencies all across the country. And, you know, they are there to say, we're not just going to shake our finger at you and say you shouldn't lose your baby to abortion. They're there to help people if they decide to keep their baby, to have their baby and give them the resources that are necessary. And, you know, we see the need for this more and more, that we have to be able to help these women take their baby full term. And then if they adopt out or if they keep or whatever, they need people to come alongside and love them and show them there's a better way to live.
So, good mix. You had a pastor, you had an elected official, you had CareNet, and it was kind of an open dialogue type of a thing surrounding really the Planned Parenthood videos.
Let me also say that our church supports another organization here in town that's called Life Light. Life Light is on Bocelli, right next to the Planned Parenthood building, as God would have it. And we support that organization as well, and we're very, very pleased to be a part of that organization.
Nice. And I will post the video of that event on here. I was kind of looking for it while we were talking, and I'm flunking out.
Okay.
So we'll find that. We need to take a really quick break, and in that 2 minutes, I'll find it and post it.
Okay.
How's that grab you?
Sounds good.
All right. So we're here with Pastor Guy Asherman. We're talking about, how about we'll just say morality.
Okay.
Not like we're the be-all and end-all. Obviously, we've got Bill here for the balance. We'll be right back. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give a damn's busted. Could I swept it from your life, but you wouldn't do it. Oh, you wouldn't do it. And you're having a baby. I'm a woman in love, and
I was like, what song is it? Classic.
Best pro-life song ever.
I don't know. I'm glad it didn't just strike me funny. Kind of came at me out of left field there. Oh, my gosh. All right. You've rejoined We the People. You can tell by the laughing. Obviously, it's the same folks that were here before. All right. We're speaking with Pastor Guy Asherman. We're talking about, I don't know, morality, I guess, in general. Planned Parenthood in specific.
Mm-hmm.
So I've linked the morality rally on there. There was quite a bit of good information on there. So if people want to go see that, that's an easy click on the website. Okay, so pastors out there in the big world, not just, you know, here in town, but out in the big world, kind of worried about doing stuff like this?
It has become an issue that we're not supposed to become involved with politics. And frankly, that is what the liberals promote. But the irony of it is that the liberal church has been using the church for decades and decades to promote their agenda. And we have just kind of fallen in line with what people are accusing and saying about political involvement in the conservative church. And then, of course, somebody throws at us that you're going to lose your tax-exempt status if you talk about this kind of stuff. Well, those are lies.
Yeah,
they're not totally lies. And so the other, I think some of this is that conservative people are very law-abiding people. And so if they've been taught that this is illegal, they just kind of normally comply, as opposed to maybe folks on the other side who don't care.
Willing to kind of color outside the lines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And so, let me give you a for instance. 70% of the people in this country believe there has to be some restrictions on abortion. That's a huge majority of people. And yet, why aren't we out there banging that drum? And we're afraid to be leaders. We're afraid that we'll get on the radar of the wrong people. And by the way, this happens. Let me give you an example. Two or three years ago, one of the members of our church was a businessman, and he was working on the Proposition 8 to try to get marriage defined as a man and a woman. And in his business location was attacked by local people, even in Redding, California, that opposed him for being a bigot, for trying to promote marriage between a man and a woman. And so there's another part of this, too, that says, you know, the folks that disagree with us will take any option available to them to try to silence us. And so, you know, we do color within the lines. We do play fair. We do keep the law. And that puts us at a tremendous disadvantage, if you would, because they don't have to play by the rules. It's kind of like arguing with a teenager, you know?
Or a five-year-old.
Yeah. They can say anything they want, and then you try to apply logic to try to convince them. It doesn't work.
Yeah, and they come back at you with something crazy again.
Yeah.
Well, so that keeps people quiet.
It does.
And they think that they're just... But in your church, how do you... I mean, churches are about morality.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you talk about morality and leave out that really big piece of the puzzle?
Well, I think our churches do teach morality. I think that they do help their people. I think they want to strengthen and encourage them, but they're afraid to take it across into the political arena because they're not sure that that's what the church is supposed to do.
Sure.
And so I think there's confusion there. I think there needs to be some education there, because if not for the churches, we wouldn't have had the United States of America over 200 years ago. Because
pastors were, Black Robe Regiment, they were a huge factor.
Sure, and the signers of the Constitution and the Declaration, they were seminary graduates. Some of them were pastors, and even if they weren't pastors, they were still seminary graduates because that's all they had. Mm-hmm. We, you know, the Christians were the one who planted the schools there. So, you know, the philosophy of a good life and living right permeated our culture because that's what our educational institutions were trying to promote. Well, we know what our institutions are promoting now. They're promoting nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay, so just as a what if we're talking about abortion as a life issue, mm-hmm. which obviously it is, and it didn't have anything to do with federal funding, mm-hmm. then I guess it wouldn't be considered a political issue?
No, I think it would be. It has been.
Yeah.
We've gotten silent on it.
That's what I mean. I think the funding is the political side of it, you know, how the tax dollars are spent.
Right.
But the concept of life...
Still an issue. I think that the Planned Parenthood debacle of the last couple of months has refueled the fires mm-hmm. and the concerns that we've always had. It's just created a way for us that we need to ride. And
it's a huge open door.
And the other thing too is that, you know, we don't think that if we march the streets that we're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. Okay, it's been around a really long time. I hope someday it gets overturned. But we're going to attack at least what's on the front burner. We want to make some kind of an impact on the issues that everybody knows is going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
The issue now is that Planned Parenthood is selling baby parts for money. And
we're paying for it.
And we're paying for it. Therefore, it gives us an opportunity. The Lord kind of opened up a door of opportunity for us to say, okay, let's use this. And, you know, the fact that it's happening is one thing. The fact that you and I are paying for it is even worse because that makes us culpable.
I was going to say, we're complicit at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Shelley brought up an excellent point. She said, you know, for years, I was talking to my mom about this too because she was part of the pro-life movement years ago. You know, 5 kids in 7 years, I guess you're pretty pro-life. And I remember them going to meetings and stuff. I was a kid. I had no idea what they were doing. But I asked her, I said, back then, what was the discussion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't changed much.
Mm-hmm.
It really hasn't changed. Those guys locked on to tissue and the blob of cells,
the fetus.
And the fetus, all these like kind of benign terms that sounded sort of non-person. And now for it to have morphed into baby body parts, and here they are with tweezers holding up a leg, which is horrific. However, it's a leg. So no more are we going to talk about these aren't people. Now they are people.
Yes, they are.
Everyone knows it.
And you know, and those who are pro-choice, which means pro-abortion, it's a little bit amazing to me that they're still holding their ground. After what Planned Parenthood has done, they are unashamedly standing up and saying, we need Planned Parenthood, they do good things for this, and we need to keep funding them. And, you know, if they're that, they're shameless. Right?
Yeah,
but why do you think...
It's women's health, right?
Yeah.
But why do you think the majority of Christians in this country, regardless of what church they go to, regardless of where their pastor stands on political issues, why have they remained silent? Why aren't they recognizing that we have a huge problem here, and they're not stepping up and making their church address these issues?
Right. Well, I think the community of the church, I think that the folks who are a part of all of the communities here or anywhere are very much aware that these are issues, are very much aware of where they stand. They are convinced in their own heart and mind that what they believe is the right thing. That's not mine, is it? No.
I don't know.
Okay.
Somebody's fries are done.
Yeah. And so, the issue is, you know, how do we get outside of our walls and have an impact upon our community? But the secular community has been pushing us into a corner for decades now. But the idea of being involved with pro-life, the church, you know, back here 20, 30 years ago, was not silent on this. I mean, if you remember, people were protesting and going to jail over this issue.
Mm-hmm. No, right.
And as a result of that, guess what happened? Nothing. The lawmakers, the attorneys, the politicians, nothing was ever changed. I happen to think, however, that tide could be turning right now. That with the audacity of what is taking place, I think that America is getting to the place now where they're going to say, enough is enough.
Yeah.
It's time to start listening to these churches, that they're not a bunch of wacko, you know, redneck, right-wingers, radical.
Haters.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, there might be a couple of them, but, you know, I associate proudly with Bible-believing people. I'm not ashamed of that.
Well, they've tried to make that bad, too.
Of course.
Because that makes us... knuckle draggers.
Yes.
You know, gun-toting Bible readers.
It's so we're the uncivilized ones.
Yeah.
While they're destroying their babies, we're the uncivilized ones.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But because they have education, because they have degrees after their name, because they've gone to institutions of higher learning, which is really lower learning.
Which assumes that people who have an education don't read the Bible.
No.
Which is totally false.
In fact, it's laughed at in the universities. Why would they do that? When I was in school, you know, eons ago, when dinosaurs reigned the earth, I was in my early 20s, and I was a brand new Christian. And so there was a course that was offered that was called The Bible as Literature.
Oh, there you go.
So I thought, well, I'll read through this and see what they have to say about it. The guy was an atheist who taught it, and he laughed at it while we were taking the Bible as literature. So that was as close as I could get to the Bible in a secular university.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
That's pretty, even back...
And that's really where it all
Even back
of,
then, yeah.
Even back then, the, so same, time I was, the same time I was in college.
Yeah, and that's kind of where it started. I mean, once they take it out of the schools, and you know, people go through the system, they come out of the system, they have no knowledge. Right. They have, and it's okay. It's now society says it's okay not to have any of that.
Right.
And if you want to go out and dabble in it on your own, that's okay too. But
just don't talk about it.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah,
that's
well,
right.
It's interesting too, because as we have gone down that road, it's a little scary because some of these other, you know, the Muslims and those guys, they just plan to outpopulate us.
Yes.
Well, gee, what a great idea.
They have more religious freedom in this country than Christians do.
Yeah.
That's the current culture.
Well, we're allowing them to come here for religious reasons, but the Christians are locked out. Mm-hmm. So there's that little problem going on, too. Yeah. A lot of little problems we've got. We've got quite a long list. We can't really say any of them are big problems because there are so many. They can't all be big.
Right. Collectively, they're huge.
Collectively, it's ginormous. Yeah. All right. We need to take a really quick break, and then we have a caller who wants to ask you a question. And
okay.
Look, we're already behind. What the heck? Bob, how are we doing? Ready to push the button on us? You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You're listening to We the People. I have posted that Morality Rally link on the We the People page. So, wow, that whole thing was really hard to say. On the We the People page, we have a Morality Rally link right there by Guy Asherman's picture of you and your lovely wife. And we have Sally on hold who has a question or a comment.
Yes, I do. I just wanted to thank Pastor Asherman for holding the Morality Rally. I attended, and I have to say I was disappointed that so few of our local pastors attended. But that being said, I just wanted to say that the gentleman before this segment, the pastor from back east, who is also a constitutionalist, just made a really good point in the fact that the Roe v. Wade case is not law, that the Supreme Court cannot make law, and that it only applied to Roe and Wade. So I think perhaps maybe that is the way we need to go, and perhaps it needs to start here. What do you say, Pastor Asherman?
I quite agree with that, but the courts are not that all that concerned with implementing existing law. The activist court on any level is about creating law and trying to change society. They are all about social change because they know better for us than we know what we really need. Yeah. So it's a very arrogant thing, and the surprising thing to me is that, you know, the founders gave us three branches of government so they could hold each other accountable, and I don't know what's going on with our Congress that this isn't being challenged more. In fact, some of the executive orders are also making law. And the latest SCOTUS decision, of course, that also created law. I don't know why this isn't being challenged, to be honest.
Well, part of it is they are so afraid of what the press will do to them if they, quote, quote, shut down the government, that they're afraid to stand on this hill. I mean, if there isn't a hill to die on, what is, if it's not life?
I think you're right. I think we are afraid of media. I think that we're afraid that we'll be cast in a bad light and we might lose our job or we won't get reelected. But I think that more and more of our legislators are waking up and more of them are being elected that says, this is not about my career. This is not about whether or not I'm going to get reelected. This is about what is right, and I'm going to answer to God for it. So we have
That vote will be coming up in October, and we're watching closely to see how our representatives vote, aren't we?
That's on the funding of Planned Parenthood. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
We will see, and you know, the churches and conservative folks need to get the word out and let people know how these folks are voting.
All right. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you, Sally. I'm glad you called.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, at the end of the day, all those people, even the ones in the Senate, because the Senate already failed, I guess, on the defunding.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't pull enough votes to overcome
override
a veto.
You need
60.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that we couldn't get, you know, six Democrats to come over the line.
Yeah. Well, there was a few Democrats that did come over, but just not enough to get over the veto thing. But I'm guessing that, you know, the last one or two holdouts, they hadn't told anybody how they were going to vote yet. There is so much deal making that goes on in Washington. She was paid off somehow, or he was paid off somehow, in order to get their vote to go one direction.
Well, it was interesting because if I could just pull it up real quick. Of course, I can't. I don't remember where I read it. I will pull it up and post it, though. It was in my email on the money that the donations from Planned Parenthood linked groups. It was huge.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was huge.
Yeah.
I was shocked. I don't know. I don't really think of them as a big money thing. I think of them more as the hammer, you hate women.
Yes.
That's usually what it turns into, is it's all about women, and if you're a man, you should just shut up.
Right. And, of course, since we're, you know, peaceful, law-abiding citizens, we don't go break the windows of the businesses that support Planned Parenthood. But if we support the conservative voice, they do come and break our windows.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they do. It's not a level playing ground. We play by the rules. And by the way, we need to play by the rules. We need to keep doing that. We don't want to discredit ourselves with becoming like them. I think we take a stand
hearing from a lot of folks are, you know what, maybe we need to break a few windows in order to get back on the right track, but you just can't do that.
Here it is, PlannedProfithood.org.
Hmm.
I knew I posted this. Yeah, Planned Profithood, that was an easy one easy one to go to, and exposing the people who profit.
Yeah.
And it literally gives you a way to put in your name and your state, the representative's name, mm-hmm. and your state, or just the state, and you can see who in your state
is supporting. Uh-huh,
yeah. Is being supported by these guys, which might make sense of some of the... I mean, some of the cash is big. Here you have $26,000, $22,000, $19,000. I mean, these are fairly hefty contributions.
Yeah.
So anyway, and they're in all different places, all different states, New York, California, Minnesota, Iowa, Florida, a lot in Florida.
Hmm.
Minnesota, I mean, you would think it would be mostly here.
Sure. And I think we need to contact, you know, our representatives, even if they're not our individual ones here. Because, you know, we're quite happy with Brian Daley. We're quite happy with Congressman LaMalfa. We're certainly not happy with our federal senators in this state. But whether there are senators or other states, I think we still need to be in contact with them. And we need to get organized better.
And the churches, you know, have connections in other states as well.
Sure, denominations and stuff.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And so what about the folks in those towns?
Mm-hmm.
You know, reach out to them. What are they doing? Because if they're the constituents, that makes a big difference.
Sure.
I don't know. Seems like there's always a lot of money in the in doing the wrong thing. And apparently selling baby body parts is lucrative.
Yeah.
Who would have known?
Bill, you had mentioned that people are so frustrated right now, they're thinking maybe we need to break some windows. Maybe we need to get back on track by saying, and I would say, take that energy and take that passion to prayer, and also take it to the local organizations that are pro-life and roll up your shirt sleeves and go to work, go help Shelley here at CareNet, go help others, get your local church involved, talk to your pastors. And, yes, you're frustrated, but channel it into a good, positive way to spread the word that we need to be doing something.
Yeah, anarchy, Bill.
No, I'm not. That's not me. I'm not saying that. I just know that we have gone so far astray that it just almost seems like it's just too far to come back from.
Let's face it. It's not even considered polite to talk about it.
Don't talk about politics or religion, and I do both.
Yeah. Well, everybody does now. That used to be, you don't ever do that, but now you can't have a conversation with somebody, and in 5 minutes you're talking about one or the other.
Yeah. That part's actually kind of cool.
It is good. Yeah.
That's changed quite a bit. But at church, it was interesting. We had, probably a month and a half ago, we had a brand new priest. It was like his very first Mass. Oh, my gosh, he hit gay marriage, abortion. Mm. He had three third rail mm-hmm. issues, and I thought, I guess you're going to be all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Good
willing,
for him.
Yeah, willing to preach on all of those and take a definitive stand.
Absolutely.
So,
good for him.
I think if we quit, I think maybe if we shine some light in the shadows and we made it not quite so easy to hide from that, that would be useful.
Sure.
So, like the CareNet guys, you were saying that there's a bill here in California now that's going to,
It's already passed. I think it was Assembly Bill 775. Shelley talked about it on the video that Erin just posted on her website. And in a nutshell, very, very briefly, 775 was a bill that required, among other things, some good, some not so good, but the part that we really got hung up on was the requirement for CareNet pregnancy centers, pro-life nonprofit organizations, had to give their clients directions on where to go and how to get an abortion. And, of course, pregnancy centers are all about not doing that. And so this gets, again, back to the purse strings, that there is a threat that is made that if you guys don't promote abortion, we're going to take away your tax-exempt status, and you may have to go to jail for this. And I got to tell you, Shelley didn't say this in the rally, but I've heard her say it before in our church during one of our services. She says, you know what? Take me to jail.
Off we go.
Because us serving jail time is minimal compared to the murder of even one baby. And we've murdered 55 million of them in this country.
Well, and you look, people are adopting children from all sorts of foreign countries.
Yeah.
Because I guess we have some kind of shortage. I'm no expert researcher on that, but
I actually think the church is going to do some changes on this. I think that the church needs to step up and say, "I'll take your baby and I'll raise your baby for you. Don't kill him." And that's when the church is getting serious, right? Instead of just, shaking our philosophical finger at people, we're actually saying, no, we're going to save lives. And it's that important. I think we should be doing that.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. All right. I just wanted to...
It's funny, though. You never hear that option. They never talk about, hey, have the baby. If you don't want it, there's millions of people out there that would love to have that baby and raise that baby as their own.
Sure.
But it's like that's really not an option. It's the woman's right to have the abortion.
And it doesn't create cash for the people who do abortions.
Yeah.
So they're not going to say, let's promote adoption.
Right. Well, and they don't get into the whole idea of what happens after the fact. How does the dad feel about that down the road?
Right.
How does the mom feel down the road?
Well,
there are plenty of people who regret these types of decisions because they felt boxed in.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because some of your listeners might be a little bit concerned that this is very condemning, that this is making them feel badly.
No,
this
everybody knows people who've been through this, and unfortunately they felt boxed in made decisions in a lot of cases. I know in the one I'm thinking of, they didn't tell anyone in their family.
Sure.
Not because the family wouldn't have supported, but it was just really kind of out of the realm.
No other option.
And
for
they
them.
Felt like they didn't have any choice. They were young.
Right.
They go in and somebody says, "Oh, honey, it's no big deal. People do it all the time."
Right.
That is powerful.
Yeah. And
a
then,
powerful
of course,
switch to
when
flip.
They get older, they find out that this was something a little bit more specific.
There was a little more to it than that.
Yeah. But to those who are listening who have had abortions, I think it's important for the church to send a a very strong message that says the love of God and the support of the church is there for you. We love you. You're no bigger a sinner than I am.
No. Yeah.
And let's not send a message that just condemns people. Let's send a message of healing to all people, wherever they have at times in the past fallen on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to make sure that we don't become what the pro-abortion people label us of being. We have to take steps that says, you know what, that's not who we are. We're not ugly. We're not haters. We're not bigots.
Mm.
We're opposed to it, but we also believe that we're here to love and support.
But it's not
people.
A personal value judgment. I mean, that doesn't solve anybody's problem.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that it has to be a decent alternative. I think for a lot of years, providing the alternative was seen as some sort of weird religious manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
If you offered to get them
right.
help or something like that, you're trying to force your religion on them
right.
rather than talk about this as a life and death issue.
Yeah.
Somehow we lost the life and death part.
Well, that's because they forced their religion on us. You know, idea of saying, you know, we're opposed to religion. Everybody has a philosophical base. Everybody has a worldview. And, you know, humanism is a religion. It is a philosophy of life on how people choose to live their life. So when people say, don't force your religion on me, what they really mean is, I choose to reject your values and substitute my values in their place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even a discussion about churches. It's a game of words in the media that I think we need to be smarter than that. It's just,
I think so too.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of us are. We just don't know what to do about it.
Well, they don't. They're too hung up on not recognizing common ground.
Yes.
I mean, there is so much common ground we could all stand on, but instead we want to nitpick all these little differences and then have our own little ball field and play our own game.
Mm-hmm.
We have to come together. That's where the power is going to be.
And it looks too hard, and it looks like a bridge too far.
It wouldn't be hard.
You're going to have to go stand on the corner and hold a sign. That's all there is to do,
churches,
is hold a sign on the corner.
Churches are territorial.
Hmm?
They don't like to do something together because they're afraid that it might be promoting your church over my church.
Your guys might slip away.
Listen, no matter what our faith and our differences are, we can be fellow stone throwers on this issue, right? We can all be on the same side throwing rocks at abortion. There's no need for us to worry about the other issues. Mm-hmm. This is too big.
It's way too big.
Well, and supporting the alternatives, which I think it really downplayed. Organizations like CareNet,
right?
And Lifelight?
Lifelight, yes.
I think are played down. And I'm sure in everyone's community, especially big cities, there are lots of places, but you wouldn't always know. And the Planned Parenthood guys, don't tell them.
Right.
They don't give it as an alternative.
Right.
And that's always kind of an interesting thing to me. Why isn't there a rule that they have to give the other side, too?
Mm-hmm.
I guess because that...
Well, we were talking about this the other day.
That blows the program.
And I got to thinking, What must the rest of the world think of this country when they hear these abortion stories?
Yes.
I mean,
they think we're barbarians.
Well,
they have to. Really quick break, guys. Hold that thought.
I want to share a story that's pertinent to this.
You're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You're on when we come back.
Okay.
We're here with Pastor Guy Asherman. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're busy running out of time yet one more time. I haven't heard that in a while.
That's been a long time.
I know. It's like, welcome to church camp.
Yeah.
All right. So before we were so rudely interrupted by Bob.
Well, Bill had mentioned, what do other people in the world think of us? Because they're seeing those videos, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and in fact, I think even Congressman LaMalfa mentioned this on the rally, and that was that parts of the world call us the Great Satan, and in some cases, they're not wrong. You know?
Yeah, that's kind of a good confirmation there.
It is. But I wanted to tell you the story that happened just recently. We sent a group of folks over to Kenya to do some work there. And they, while they were there, they spoke to 5,000 students in several different locations about abstinence, sexual abstinence, because HIV and AIDS is huge in Kenya, as it is in many African countries. And so we were there talking about abstinence. We were also talking about same-sex attraction, but God's Word says that we are to resist that and go with heterosexual marriages and relationships. So they were there for like 10 days teaching this to thousands of people, teaching it to pastors who wanted to know how they're supposed to teach their people. Well, they were there for 10 days or so, and they left on a Thursday of this 1 week. And as they were flying out on Thursday, President Obama was flying in. And the agenda that President Obama had was to convince the people of Kenya that they should support same-sex marriage. And so, you know, and the people that our group were in contact with, in Kenya, they're there for 10 days, they're teaching, and
sure,
we had people coming up to them, even high school students, saying, what is wrong with you Americans?
Yeah.
How do you answer that? You know, well, there is a lot wrong with us Americans.
Right.
And it's time to take it back.
Yeah, because that isn't what the bulk of people think.
I don't think it is either.
People are just, they don't know how to combat it, and they don't want to be mean to other people. But how do you oppose the idea without opposing the people?
Right.
And then, of course, it becomes like women's health. You know what I mean?
You hate women if you're against abortion.
Yeah, there's just this little twist all of a sudden, and you wind up in the crosshairs, and the issue is dropped.
Yeah.
All right, we're going down the morality trail with you again. We'll be doing this
Thank you for having me.
Off and on. Thanks a million.
Well, thanks for coming. We always enjoy it.
It's good for a Sunday, you know what I mean?
That sure.
Double lineup of pastors. And for those of you listening on Monday, we hope you enjoyed it on Monday, too. God works 7 days a week.
Amen.
I don't care what you've read. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. America.